Alrighty folks, and welcome to the Chronicle Podcast channel. This is episode 50, the An Lushan Rebellion, part 1. So I think the first thing I need to say is that here we are, 50th episode along this chronological timeline. I mean, there's been some guests on the show and things as well, but I just want to say thank you to everyone who's stuck by the show, even though there has been some ups and downs in terms of when I'm releasing content, and again, this release date is another example of that. So I am sorry about that. So yeah, the last episode we were talking about Tan Xuanzong, the peak emperor of the peak dynasty in the peak era of China. And of course, we're left with this sort of, I want to call it, cliff edge, where this just suddenly ends when a general decides to rebel. However, there's a bit of controversy about this, because this general, he might have been loyal until he was kind of forced into this rebellion. Like, it's kind of a weird one. So I'm going to kind of leave that historical debate through this, and that's why the title of this episode is The An Lushan Rebellion Part 1, because I thought it'd be kind of cool to go into the causes of the rebellion, and then of course leave that debate there. Like, was he forced into it or was he not? And then of course we'll talk about the rebellion itself in the next episode, and like the devastating impact it had. So that's kind of where we are. And the last time, obviously, Emperor Xuanzong, he was getting very busy with his favourite mistress of the time, Yang Guifei. And whilst he was absent on the front of governance, the state was beginning to crumble right under his nose. And it's now time to introduce you lovely people to three men who will cause this almost heartbreaking rebellion in some ways. And it was such an unnecessary one on so many levels when you kind of look at like how it happened. It was almost like it was an accident sometimes. But the three men that we're going to look at are Li Linfu, Yang Guozhong, and An Lushan, of course. But we'll start with the first two, because they kind of enter into a bit of a rivalry. And the first one, Li Linfu, he is the one who puts An Lushan in his position in the first place. So Li Linfu was appointed as the chief minister of the Tang in 736. And the good times I had mentioned in my previous episode under this same emperor were beginning to lose their way. Now, what's surprising is that in the first 6 years where Li Linfu enters the scene, he had improved life for all within the court, and even the common people. For example, he made reforms to the currency, which had a pretty good impact, and the good times continued to happen. However, it changed when one minister died and was replaced by Li Shuqir. Li Linfu, paranoid about rivals to his power, and in particular Li Shuqir, made two critical blunders. The first was that he was afraid of Chinese members of court rivaling his favour with the emperor. So he trumped up charges against them, and soon enough they were all executed. So this is a time when the court is beginning to eat itself, and it's because of Li Linfu and his paranoia about power. And in particular, Li Shuqir plays a vital role in kind of feeding this paranoia, because he's a member of the royal family. And he's got a lot of followers behind him. So this is like, obviously, he's thinking that there's going to be some kind of power struggle between the two of them. And he's thinking, well, I've been in this position a lot longer, and I'm going to strike first. And the problem that we have with all of these members or ministers getting executed during this kind of paranoid reign is that they were the most capable ministers around. And these purges had a ripple effect throughout the empire. For example, a minister named Huang Fu Weimin, now growing ever more powerful after military victories against the Tibetans, criticised Li Linfu in front of the court. Well, of course we all know how that's going to go down. And Li Linfu soon tells Emperor Xuanzong that Huang Fu Weimin was actually plotting with the heir to the throne in order to organise a coup. Him and the heir apparent were interrogated, but the charges were not enough to prove them guilty after the interrogation, and Huang Fu Weimin was then sent to a provincial post, and the heir apparent was kept under a closer watch. Li Shuqi, the biggest rival to Li Lingfu, then retired from politics afterwards, from fear of Li Lingfu's growing power. And again, like, Li Shuqi was actually kind of friends with Huang Fu Weimin, so obviously, like, that's, you don't want to be getting involved there. And, like, just to kind of put a pause on the story here, it kind of, this reminds me a lot of some amazing generals who served the court of whichever dynasty they were serving. For example, the Song, there was a couple of generals there. They had a brilliant expedition against, like, a foreign power or something, and, like, did a great service to the court, but then jealous ministers soon find out and then plot against them and have them killed, or in this case exiled. And then this is the thing as well, like, so he was sent to a provisional post, and for now Li Lingfu is kind of playing within the boundaries of, like, court politics, so to speak, but of course he's already got a track record of killing off competition, which is what we're getting into now. So, supporters of Li Shuqi thought that this would be the end of it, and they were in for a nasty shock, because a lot of them, they seen where the wind was blowing and kind of retired. But if you take a look into the mind of Li Lingfu as a paranoid, power-hungry minister, then I could see why you wouldn't want these rivals around. They're kind of a loose end that you need to tie up. Otherwise, you know, they'll come back to bite you. What happened after this was, another accusation was thrown against the heir apparent, this time not by Li Lingfu, and the man who was supposedly starting this new rebellion was called Tu Yulin. And after much interrogation, he was put to death with two of his allies. Then, of course, from the epicenter, the network of families and friends stretches out to the tentacles of Li Lingfu's wrath, and they stretch ever outward, and all of these people begin to get implicated as more people are calling more people into this. And eventually, one of the crown princes was getting interrogated at Li Yong, and he was the unlucky prince who was flogged to death. And then, of course, the tentacles keep reaching out, and soon they get to Li Shuqi, who knew where things were going, so he poisoned himself. And then Li Lingfu wasn't done there, and he had Li Shuqi's son put to death, and his immediate family all sent away to barren provinces. Then, of course, you get to Huang Fu Weimin, who was out in a provisional role, and he was also executed. By 747, the purge was complete, and Li Lingfu had established full control over the court. One man to benefit from this was called Yang Shenqing. And at first, him and Li Lingfu had a good working relationship, but then soon enough, after the deeds were done, they both seen each other as loose ends and clashed. Li Lingfu, one said clash, and Yang Shenqing, as well as his two brothers, were forced to commit suicide. And the Oxford History of China sums up this whole thing rather well by saying, quote, "This period of bitter factional intrigue left Li Lingfu the victor, but he weakened both his own position and, more importantly, the position of the central government and the emperor in several ways. The central bureaucracy was staggered and to some extent cowed by the violence of Li Lingfu's purges, and great numbers of prominent men died or were thrust into obscurity. The control of state finances remained in the hands of an aristocratic specialist, Wang Hong, who was purely concerned with the exploitation for his own advantage at court and with corrupt self-enrichment," end quote. And here's the thing, we haven't even got to An Lushan's rebellion yet, but here all I'm doing is kind of setting the scene for just what the hell is happening in the Tang court before things really kick off. And the quote touches on what I said the second blunder Li Lingfu commits. So the first one was that he killed off a bunch of capable ministers who could run the empire, but the second is just as crucial. Afraid of people rivaling his power again, he appointed non-Chinese generals in charge of the Tang armies. Now on paper, it looks like it's a good idea, because these people are not a personal threat to Li Lingfu, and as well as that, they should be kind of they should be showing gratitude towards him because he's put them there. But they were not exactly loyal to the central government either, which of course will cause problems when things do kick off. And we're getting there. But the most critical of these appointments by Li Linfu was appointing An Lushan as the general of the Northern Armies. So he was kind of like in what would be modern-day Manchuria, or like the northeast of China now. That's kind of where he was stationed. And with these purges, the Tang court became factionalized, where people were either on Li Linfu's side or they were not. But this is where the second man in our tale comes into this. His name is Yang Guozhong. Now please pay attention to the family name here. His name is Yang. This was Yang Guifei's brother. So Lady Yang was doing a great job of charming the emperor with her thick curves, I'm guessing, and had convinced him to replace some of these really dead ministers with her own relatives. And the man she wanted to balance Li Linfu was her brother, Yang Guozhong. Yang Guozhong was adamant that he would take down Li Linfu, and had begun plotting against him. And with his sister charming the emperor, Li Linfu couldn't really do much to stop him. However, Yang Guozhong wouldn't have to worry too much about Li Linfu, as he was getting to get a little bit older, and he became mortally sick, and by 752 he died, thus leaving his power in the hands of Yang Guozhong. This is where we get to the crux of the An Lushan Rebellion. An Lushan was arguably loyal to the Tang court at first, and definitely he was to Li Linfu. But Yang Guozhang was not of the same mind, and this could be argued for good reason. The central government was now seriously undermined by the massive armies and the military governors on the frontiers of the empire, and they could easily march on Chang'an if they wanted to. To make matters worse, they were not Han Chinese, so not exactly of the same mind as the central bureaucracy. Yang Guozhong wanted to counterbalance the man with the largest army in the land, who was of course An Lushan, who had at least, and this is like from the Oxford Dictionary of China, of Chinese history, sorry, at least 164,000 troops stationed in the north and eastern frontiers of the empire, which is actually kind of close to modern day Beijing. So in this sense, I think we can all understand Yang Guozhong's fear that he might control the imperial court and the capital, but that means nothing when you are dwarfed by An Lushan's battle-hardened troops, as the northeast was one of the hotspots on the frontiers. To counter this, Yang Guozhong got close with An Lushan's closest rivalry in the military, Ko Shuhan, and he was a man of Turkic descent, and he was stationed in the northwest to Chang'an. Again, a frontier where there was a lot of conflict, so the troops were pretty battle-hardened. Ko Shuhan had around 143,000 men under his command, and welcomed the idea of getting close to Yang Guozhong in order to prevail over his rival. The bitterness between An Lushan and Ko Shuhan can go back to when Li Linfu was the premier in court, and the two men argued in front of the emperor. Xuanzong did try to help calm them both down, but it just made things worse. Anyway, convinced that An Lushan would rebel, Yang Guozhong convinced the emperor to summon him to court in order to test his loyalty. An Lushan complied, which again kind of suggests that he was kind of unbeknownst to him that, you know, people were thinking he was going to rebel. He was summoned and he came. But then obviously that really rubs the salt in the wounds for Yang Guozhong, because obviously he's thinking that this guy's going to rebel, and then during this meeting, An Lushan swears his loyalty to the emperor, and in response, the emperor appoints An Lushan as the commissioner of the imperial stables. And then An Lushan takes full advantage of this by giving his own army of elite cavalry units, which were the best cavalry around. And of course, it was quite ironic, as this does get used against the Vieri emperor who gave him the horses. But An Lushan was not to know of that yet, of course. But it was clear that Yang Guozhong was impressed and fearing for his life. An Lushan told the emperor he had to return to his army, and then left the imperial court in the year 754. Only after being there for 2 months. An Lushan, upon returning to his army, sailed through the river systems day and night, not stopping by any cities in fear that Yang Guozhong would detain him, And that was the tone set for the Empire. The two men were on a path to war. In the lead up to hostilities breaking out, the two men tried their best to consolidate their own positions whilst building up and preparing for a conflict. And this is where I will end the show, as I want to bring up a debate which I think a lot of people ask, even today. Did An Lushan always plan to rebel? Or was he forced into it by Yan Guozhong and his paranoia? Now, to answer that question, of course, it's pretty difficult and you're going to have debates on either side. And again, one can see Yan Guozhong's predicament with such a large army that he doesn't know is loyal to the central government. But on the other hand, his actions certainly did nothing to help the situation. He predicted An Lushan would rebel and basically made it happen through this constant reminder to the emperor that he would. And now, to look at this from An Lushan's perspective, it's clear that he was content in his position with Li Lingfu in charge. But when he died, the situation had changed. The tone of the court had changed. And it was clear to everyone the emperor wasn't exactly controlling the imperial court either, as he was too busy with his favourite consort. And because one just needs to look at what Li Lingfu had managed to do. It was clear to An Lushan that if things were to continue down this route, he would have to take matters into his own hands, which is exactly what happened. So I am going to leave it here, and in 2 weeks' time, I promise, in 2 weeks' time, we will dive into the military campaign itself, which is a fascinating but horrific conflict. And I will leave you with the question I asked earlier. Did An Lushan always plan to rebel, or was he forced into it by Yan Guozhong and his paranoia? Thanks for listening.